Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller, and we're going to start today by talking about vermiculture, which is also known as worm composting. And Joe Van Rossum is a recycling specialist and the director of the UW Extension Solid and Hazardous Waste Education Center. Joe is joining us in the studio today to share all he knows about worms. Thanks so much for coming in, Joe.
Glad I could be here, Judith.
So, worm composting is fascinating, and as we were talking about earlier, I just started doing it myself, so I'm especially interested right now. But let's start out by talking a little about the worms themselves. What role do worms play in an ecosystem?
I guess in an ecosystem, they're kind of the recyclers of the eco world, where they're taking leaves, dead plant materials, and recycling those materials back into the nutrients that plants can use to live, grow, and thrive.
And I know they can be very effective. We had someone on earlier in the year talking about actually the damage that earthworms can do in a forest, and they can actually take down chunks of forests and trees. It's pretty impressive for such an unassuming little critter.
It certainly is. But, you know, the insect world and the worm world, you know, we may see one or two of them, but there's just thousands of these organisms that are living beneath the soil surface, and they're just churning away. What they may lose in size, they make up in numbers, that's for sure.
And so, actually, how much can a worm digest in, say, a day or a week? Or
well, it really depends on the type of worm. The worms we look for vermicomposting, Encinia foetida or red wiggler, they have a very healthy appetite. They can eat half their body weight in food each day.
Wow.
Compared to, you know, a night crawler you dig up in your backyard in Wisconsin, they really don't eat very much compared to these red wigglers. They almost have a super appetite. And that's why we like to use them for vermicomposting.
So you said up to half their weight in food a day. So that would be like a 150-pound person eating 75 pounds of food a day.
That's
each
right.
Each and every day.
Yes. So they have a metabolism that allows them to consume that quantity of food each day in order to live and grow. Their lifespan's a little shorter than ours. They only live for about 1 year. Mm-hmm. But still, they're... their goal in life is really to eat food and reproduce.
And actually, talking about reproduction, how do they do that? And how often do they do that?
They reproduce after they reach about a 4 to 6 weeks age period. Mm-hmm. They've reproduced by producing a cocoon that will generally produce two or three little worms that will crawl out after about a 3 to 4 week incubation time. And the worms can reproduce, produce a cocoon. I think it's about every two cocoons per week they can produce. Kind of that's the maximum rate. So maybe you'd see one to two cocoons per week. So it doesn't take long for one worm or two worms to turn into many, many worms within your worm bin.
Especially if conditions are right, and we'll talk about what those conditions are. But what do those cocoons look like?
They start out relatively small. They tend to be white in color, almost like a lint ball sort of thing. They can be a little bit difficult to find within your worm bin, but if you've got happy and healthy worms, they're most likely going to be mating and producing cocoons.
So, I want to make sure that people know how they can join in the conversation. If you have a question about worm composting, maybe you do it already and want some tips on how to do it better, or maybe you're thinking it might be something fun to start and aren't sure how, you can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. Rachel Owens, our on-air producer today, she will get your calls and emails through to us. And you can also post photos or comments on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show. Mueller is spelled M-E-I-L-L-E-R. If you have a worm bin and have some pictures, we'd love to see those. So, Joe, you talked about the red wigglers being kind of the preferred worm composting worm. How big are they, and what do they look like?
I guess they're reddish in color, but they have these lighter colored bands that go run the length of their body. And they're small. They're about 1 to 2 inches in length. So they don't look like much, but, you know, you add them up.
Deceptively little creatures.
Yes.
But
it takes about 1,000 of them to make up 1 pound. So if you're producing 1 pound of food per day of waste in your home, you're going to need about 2 pounds of worms within your bin in order to make sure that they're able to consume the food that you're adding to your worm bins.
And I want to talk about what kind of food is best to add to those worm bins. But first, let's talk about the difference between worm composting and regular composting, warm composting, actually worm and warm, or hot composting, because a lot of people have a compost pile, you know, out in their garden that they put things in, turn over every once in a while, and get good compost out of that. But warm composting is a little different ecosystem.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. It's still the same principle where you're taking a food source and converting it back into a soil amendment that can be added to your garden or houseplants. With backyard outdoor composting, you're generally going to be using much larger volumes of materials. It's able to tolerate a larger range of temperatures, which is important in Wisconsin because it does get cold. And some people like to have the opportunity to continue composting their food scraps over the winter months. They don't like adding it to the frozen backyard compost pile. So a worm bin is a really good alternative to continue to recycle your food scraps and continue to reduce how much waste you're sending to the landfill.
And I think it's important to note that the outdoor compost bins or piles, however people do it, often get really hot. And that's part of what breaks things down quickly. And things do slow down significantly in the winter. There's still some activity, but a lot of it is heat generated. But of course, the little worms wouldn't do too well if it got too hot in your worm bin, because they would die.
No, if you're really good at backdoor or backyard composting, you can get your compost pile up to 130, 140 degrees. If you had your worms in there, they want to leave. That's much too warm for them. The worms really become stressed at about 80 degrees, and they start looking for the door to try to get out of your worm bin. They really prefer it about 50 to 75 degrees as the temperature within a worm bin. But in your backyard compost bin, those temperatures are beneficial. Above 130 degrees, you start deactivating weed seeds. You start killing plant pathogens and diseases, so your compost is a little healthier that you spread on your soil. So you don't have as many weeds germinating, and you're not propagating some diseases through your compost pile. The worm bin, on the other hand, it doesn't get to those higher temperatures. It relies a little bit more on the stomach of the worm, so to speak, to kind of take care of some of the pathogens. But we also want to be careful what we put into our worm bins to make sure that we're not adding something that may cause health problems to ourselves further down the line.
Right, and let's talk more about that in a bit, but I want to go to the phones because we have some people that want to join the conversation. We have Scott on the line. Hi, Scott.
Hello there.
What's your question?
My question is, I love my lawn, and I also help other people out with their lawns, and I have read so many variations on if you should artificially put worms into your lawn to help out with aeration and so forth, and I've never had a straight answer. I've heard you shouldn't do it, you should do it, so that is my question. What is your thought on actually putting worms into your lawn for aeration?
Thanks, Scott.
Well, I am definitely not a turf grass expert by any means, but what I can speak to from a worm's point of view, or their view, is they want to live in an environment that's healthy for them. And so many times we add chemical fertilizers and pesticides to our lawns, and that really discourages life like worms from hanging out there. And I think if we can create an atmosphere that's conducive for worms, they tend to move into those areas that they're most happy in. And if we're mowing our lawns and we're leaving our grass clippings lay on the lawn, I suspect that worms and other organisms are going to show up to eat those grass clippings that we leave there.
Thanks for that call, Scott. And your question might be good to ask also on a Garden Talk segment sometime. We can talk more about it from the turf perspective. Now, Joe, I actually want to go back to what you're saying about the worms eating the food waste or the grass clippings, things like that. Are they actually eating the materials, or are they eating more what's growing on the materials?
The worms actually eat both. You know, within a worm bin, you're going to have, not only are the worms going to be living there, but you'll have mold and some bacteria that are going to be living there as well. And the worms have a pretty wide diet, and they're happy eating the bacteria that are living on the food or just chewing on the food itself. So they seem to, they have preferred food, certainly, but they do okay eating the bacteria as well. So that's part of their diet.
So they're taking care of both
yes.
parts. And I assume the bacteria are actually helping break down the food, so it's a little
yes,
easier to digest.
Yes, they're certainly breaking down the larger pieces of food, making it softer, making it a little bit easier for the worms to eat it and to digest it. So,
I have to say, when I was looking into setting up a worm bin and doing my research, I have to say it gave me a little pause when I hit the part in Worms Eat My Garbage where Mary Appelhoff talks about all the other kinds of critters that are probably living in your worm bin, like springtails and all kinds of other little things. And I had a moment where I thought, do I really want to have all these little things living in my basement? But they're all, it really is a large ecosystem. It's not just the worms and the garbage. It's this whole system.
Right. And I like to, when I talk about or introducing someone to vermicomposting, think of it of having a pet, bringing a new pet into your house. And your worm bin is, in essence, an aquarium. And you're trying to create living conditions that are favorable for our worms.
Mm-hmm.
Those living conditions are actually not only just favorable for worms, but also for other bacteria and fungi that are going to use those food scraps as a food source as well. So, we can't really have one without the other. It's kind of like having a pet cat and expecting, I find the litter box a little disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't necessarily have a cat without having that litter box in your house.
In fact,
house.
You really want that litter box, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And actually, the second segment today after 11:45, we'll be talking about mushrooms and fungi, and we'll be finding out actually that there's fungi all over and in us and outside us and everywhere. So there is a lot out there, whether we're actually thinking about it or not. Well, let's go back to the phones. We have Barb in Hazelhurst next. Hi, Barb.
Good morning. I have a question regarding the construction of this worm box that is located in your basement. I have night crawlers outside in, it's below the frost line. Use the worms until I'm done fishing with them. After I'm done with that, I take my compost and I spread it over my yard. But if you're talking about doing this in the winter, I'd like to know what kind of construction it is that you would be using, and then are these worms just specifically used for composting, or can they be used for fishing also?
All right, thanks for that call. And my understanding is that red wigglers are actually the preferred trout fishing worm, so it seems like it could do double duty that way.
Yeah, certainly if you have a fisherman in your household and they'd like to rob your worm bin for bait, that certainly can happen. But really what I'd like to stress is if you're going to start a worm bin, probably the best, it's not a good idea to go to your backyard and dig up the worms that are living in the soil there. Those worms just do not have the same appetite as the red wiggler does. A red wiggler is going to consume about half its body weight. The earthworms or the night crawlers in our backyards really don't have a healthy appetite. They like cooler temperatures than what's going to be found in your worm bin. So I really recommend people purchasing the red wigglers. Make sure you get the right one so that you have a healthier worm bin.
And so you can judge more how much waste you should be putting into
yes,
it and things like that.
That certainly is helpful. And, the nice thing is with the red wigglers, they still are useful for bait. Many of the suppliers that that sell the worms for composting are also selling the very same worms to bait dealers and bait shops. So,
and you can, if you want to start kind of small scale, you could always just go to a bait shop and get some red wigglers to start your bin.
That is a possibility. I usually try to steer people away from that and try to get the worms from a reputable source that sells the Encinia fetida, because they seem to really do best for the worm composting. And sometimes a red wiggler in a bait shop just happens to be a small red-colored worm,
mm-hmm.
and it may not necessarily only be the right worm that you want for your worm bed.
Okay. And so the red wigglers are the best composting worm, and they're also good for bait, so everybody in the family can be happy.
Yes, and because they reproduce so quickly, it's relatively easy to allow a few worms to leave the bin as bait.
In fact, you might want to, befriend a fisher person to take care of those excess. Great. Thanks for that call. And actually, let's talk a little bit about how we've been talking about the bin, but what is this bin that the worms can be set up in?
Well, you really have maybe two choices when it comes to bin. You can either purchase a manufactured bin. They run from anywhere from maybe $60 to $300 for a worm bin. But most people aren't really in the market for a $300 worm bin, so they prefer to maybe build their own. You can use wood to build a bin. The usual size is about 1 foot deep, 2 feet wide, and about 3 feet long should be sufficient for the average household. The other strategy that people use, and maybe the most common, is to take a rubber tub type container that's maybe 4 or 5 gallons in size, and use that as their worm bin. The important thing that we want to do with those bins is to drill some holes in the bottom of it so that any excess liquid has a chance to drain out of it. Usually what I'll do is I'll take the lid off of the bin and put it underneath, and it can act as a tray to catch any of that excess liquid, and I just have to pour that off sometimes into a plant to water it as a way to catch any excess liquid.
It seems like it would be kind of like a compost tea that would be leaking out.
Yeah, it's a little bit like that. I visited a nature center, and they had a worm bin, and they actually had a tube running from the bottom of the worm bin into one of their planters.
Wow.
So it was a direct line where it didn't require human intervention.
And so, a happy plant, I bet.
It sure was green and large.
There you go. We are talking about worm composting today, vermiculture, with Joe Van Rossum. He's a recycling specialist and director of the UW Extension Solid and Hazardous Waste Education Center. Have you worm composted or are thinking you might like to try? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. Thanks for tuning in today to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller today and talking about worm composting. And if you have a question about how to do it or why to do it, you can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. So, Joe, I it sounds like I kind of started big because I took a 10-gallon tub. I like to jump into things with both feet. And I actually set it in a second tub. So I drilled holes in the bottom of the first one, then set it in the second tub and put the lid on and drilled holes in it. But let's talk a little bit about preparing the bin before the worms ever get there. What kind of materials do you want to have as bedding?
Usually the best type of bedding that I found is just shredded newspaper. Stay away from the glossy advertising pieces, but just good old shredded newspaper. The worms need moisture as well, so we want to add water to it until the bedding feels like a damp sponge is really what we want to add. Other people have used shredded cardboard. If you have leaves, leaves work as well. They tend to clump together a little bit, but paper seems to be kind of the best thing that works. Shredded office paper works as well. So if you have a paper shredder in the office where you're working and, you grab a few handfuls of that and add that to your worm bin, they like that as well.
And so what purpose does the bedding serve?
It does two things. One, it gives them a place to live. The red wigglers are adverse to light. So they want, if you shine a light on them, they're going to try to bury themselves into wherever they're living. And the bedding acts as a place for them to live. It also acts as kind of the fiber for their diet. Mm-hmm. They need a source of carbon-type material in order to survive. So they'll eat the bedding material along with the food scraps that you add to that compost bin.
And the food scraps you actually kind of bury into the bedding and then cover it up, partly to control odor and also things like fruit flies, which I know we have someone who has a question about. So actually, let's go to Matt in Spooner because I think he has a question on exactly that topic. Hi, Matt.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, how are you?
Hi, Matt.
Oh, I happen to be coming up from the basement. from feeding my little buddies, and I heard the advertisement for your show.
Perfect timing.
Fruit flies. Is there anything you can do about them?
Well, Matt, I've got a worm bin in my office, and I had a fruit fly infestation at one point in time. And the other people working in my area were not very pleased with the fruit flies flying around. And I tried a number of different things. Some people say, well, you can trap them, you know, put beer in a cup, and, you know, maybe that'll attract them, and they'll fly in and they'll drown happy flies. But what I've really found has worked best is to keep a layer of about 2 inches of shredded paper on top of the bin at all time. That seems to be deep enough that it keeps the fruit flies from being able to go into the bin in order to lay their eggs to reproduce. Hmm. Fruit flies have a relatively short lifespan, so if you keep that layer thick enough, that seems to do the trick in my bin.
Have you ever tried anything like an Osage orange or something? One of them hedge balls or?
No, I haven't. And, you know, in my travels around the state talking about composting, you know, I've heard lots of ideas for controlling fruit flies, you know, a piece of bread inside the bin, cut the tips off of the banana peels before you add them. You know, what I've found is keeping that 2-inch layer of bedding on top really seems to do the job, or the best job, of keeping the fruit fly population at bay.
All right. Well, thank you.
And okay. Matt, how long have you had a worm compost bin?
Well, I just started a new one this year. I'd stumbled on it by accident. I had a pit out back that I was throwing all my scraps into, and I found out I attracted them naturally. And then I seen that book. I own it now, that Mary Appelhoff book, and I just started transplanting them from outside into the house and back into the pit again in the spring.
And so are they red wigglers that you've got?
Yes. Yeah, there's actually a variety of them. They're just the natural ones that you'd find underneath the leaf clutter and stuff. They seem to do a pretty good job.
Oh, great. And hopefully those suggestions from Joe will help you keep down your fruit flies, because, yeah, that would certainly take a little of the fun out of it if you're fighting your way through a swarm of fruit flies to get to your bin.
Yeah, they can be a little bit annoying at times, that's for sure.
But they're not doing any harm.
No, until they land in your drink or your food and those sorts of things.
Great. Well, thanks for that call, Matt. And so we talked about the bedding and then putting in the food waste for the worms to eat and covering it up to prevent some of the pests like fruit flies. But what kind of foods are best for worms, or what are their favorites and what really don't agree with them?
Well, really, worms will eat just about anything you add to a bin. But we want to make sure that what we're putting in our bins in our home kind of fit to what we're doing inside our household. So we want to keep out meat and bones. They definitely aren't something we want in our home vermicomposting bin. And probably the other maybe food source that they seem not to care for so much are citrus.
Hmm.
They don't necessarily eat orange peels or lime peels very quickly, and they really seem to be worm resistant, so to speak.
Okay.
But, you know, just about anything that's on your plate,
mm-hmm.
Or from preparing vegetables, you know, all good things to add to your compost bin.
And I heard that they're not wild about it, or it's not too good for them to put in onion waste or garlic waste.
Well, it's kind of like our own diets. You know, I think worms seem to thrive better when they get a variety of foods.
Mm-hmm.
And if we just are making, say, French onion soup, and we've got a bunch of or onion peels, mm-hmm. or onion ends, and add those, you know, they may not like it so mm-hmm. much, and it may take them a little while to go through it, but you know, usually I say, let your nose be your guide to what your worm bin is doing. If mm-hmm. you get a little bit of an ammonia smell or a rotten egg smell, it's probably time to back off how much food mm-hmm. you're adding mm-hmm. to that worm bin.
And does it help the worms if you cut the waste into smaller pieces, or does it matter?
It doesn't matter a whole lot. You know, I certainly don't want to be putting in, you know, a whole broccoli stalk.
A whole cabbage or something.
Right. So, you know, the smaller pieces will be easier for the worms to eat, but at the same time, they may decompose a little bit more rapidly and may cause a little bit of an odor issue.
Okay.
So, okay. You know.
So a happy medium in all things, variety and size. All right. Well, let's go back to the phone because we have several people who want to join the conversation. We have Dot in Manitowoc. Hi, Dot.
Hi. I have a worm bin compost apartment. There's four levels.
Like a kitty condo, but for worms.
Yes, right. What is the element of the end product of the worm? There's, of course, a liquid, and then, of course, there's solids. Now, would you mix the liquid with something else before you put it onto your plants?
So basically, is it such a high concentration of nutrients that it could cause some kind of a burn or something, maybe?
I think it certainly could overload a plant if it was a small pot and you just dumped the straight liquid onto it. But maybe what you want to do is dilute it a little bit in your watering can and spread it around so more plants within your house kind of get the benefit from it.
And certainly, Joe, it seems like, we're talking about worm composting indoors, and so we're thinking, well, using it on indoor plants. But it seems like you could also use that kind of compost tea on any outdoor plants as well.
You certainly can. But one thing I like to talk about when we talk about vermicomposting is some people go into this with this vision that they're going to get all sorts of this finished compost coming out of the worm bin. But the reality of it is the worms really break down those materials, and you really don't get a whole lot of material coming out. The food waste going into that bin is about 80% water. And so you'll probably get more of the liquid coming out, which certainly does work well for adding the plants both indoor and outdoors. But that finished compost product that you get, that small little quantity, certainly you're going to probably want to use it judiciously, spread it on top of the surface of some potted plants, maybe mix it in into some potting mixes. Maybe about a fourth of the volume can be the vermicomposting. So you make so little of it, you'll feel that it's really valuable material.
It's worth its weight in gold. And I think that actually that's part of that. This is one of those situations where the product is kind of the cherry on the cake, but it's really the process, that this huge amount of waste that, as you said, would have been going into a landfill otherwise, and breaking down but not doing any good, is being turned into this much smaller, much more condensed, nutrient-rich material.
Right, because about 20% of the waste leaving our homes is food waste.
Wow.
So we certainly produce a lot. I think we all shop with how we think we should eat, and we get home and the bag of chips looks a lot better than the apple. And then the apple goes bad, but the chips will last forever in a bag. So we end
up they don't last forever, as we all know.
That's true. But those vegetables that have gone bad, those are all good things that we can add to our bin and get some value back out of them rather than just tossing them in the trash.
Great. Thanks for that call, Dot. And let's go to Dwight in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi, Dwight.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. Say, what a great show. I've been thinking about doing this before, but where do you get all, what all do you need, and where's a good place to start as far as acquiring it? And does it smell, and can you put a lid on it?
Well, that's a lot of questions, Dwight. But
Dwight's inspired. Yes. That's our goal.
The place that I would direct anyone to start, and Judith mentioned it once or twice already, Worms Eat My Garbage, which is a book by Mary Appelhoff. And it really is the vermicomposting Bible, so to speak, and it really has all that sort of information that you need to get started. Another place you can go is to go to our website, and we have a couple of different publications there. If you just do a web search on UW Extension Worm Composting, odds are we're going to come up close to the top of that search list.
And actually, we do have a link from the Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. There's a link right to the, I think, 7-page handout about how to get started and everything.
Yeah, so we have a short publication on how to build your own worm bin. We have another publication that shares where you can go to purchase worms, or if you don't want to build your own bin, we have a listing of some companies that provide the manufactured bins that we heard about a little bit earlier. And there's all sorts of resources there that you can go to get started. If you're ready to get started right now, go down to the local hardware store, pick yourself up a rubber plastic tub, and see if you can find a friend who's vermicomposting and get some worms from them.
And I have to say, I just started mine right after Thanksgiving. And yeah, it was a little scary, like, oh, how do I start? But there is great information. I use the UW Extension publication to get me started. And it really is quite easy to set up. And no, I mean, the worms are the most quote unquote exotic part of the mix. I mean, everything else is really household material pretty much.
That's true. You know, all of us probably have at least one spare plastic tub laying around the house that we could probably use, but give it a good washing before you add the worms.
And I think Dwight also asked about putting a lid on it. And actually, because as you said, red wigglers don't like the light, it's fine to put a lid on, right?
Yeah, it's okay to go ahead and snap a lid on top of it. Some people will just lay a full sheet of newspaper over the top of the bedding as well. Since they don't like the light, they're going to stay in the bin. If you keep conditions right for them, that's not too wet and it's not overloaded with food, you keep the temperature right, there's absolutely no reason for the worms to leave.
Why would they go anywhere else? But actually, Kayla in Stevens Point has a question on that topic. Kayla, what's your question?
Well, I recently started doing the worm ranching, I've heard it called. And about 6 or 8 months ago, we started. And over the last 2 months now, they've been escaping from their little bin. I'll come home from work and there will be 100 worms all over our floor, and they weren't there in the morning. I'm assuming that it's because of the, ratio of dry to wet material, but I'm not sure. We've had fruit fly problems, so we've put newspaper over the top, and it seems as though when I spray the newspaper down and put some of the whatever alive ones are left back in, they'll stay in there. But I don't know, what am I doing that makes them want to commit suicide?
So Kayla has worms on the loose, Joe. What would you recommend?
Well, Kayla, it sounds like you're more of a worm wrangler than a worm rancher.
There you go.
That's what I feel like.
But
do you lasso them to get them back in there?
The worms.
Very sad.
Worms are going to probably leave the bin for maybe one of three reasons. One, it's too wet for them. Really, we want it to be about as damp as a well-wrung-out sponge within that worm bin. Make sure your bin has some drainage holes on the bottom so that excess liquid can drain away. Another reason they may be leaving the bin is if it's too warm for them. If it's above 75 degrees, odds are they're going to start thinking this is a little too warm, time to get out of the sauna. We want something a little cooler. So they'll leave trying to seek out cooler pastures. And maybe the third reason that they may be leaving is that if you're overloading the worm bin with too much food. If you're adding too much food and you're getting a little bit of an ammonia or a rotten egg smell, that may mean that there's not enough oxygen within that worm bin for the worms to be happy and healthy. So if there's not enough oxygen, they're going to leave trying to find a better environment.
Well, good luck with that, Kayla. And certainly if you have a picture of your worm wrangling, we would love to see it. So we're talking about, you know, keeping the worms happy. We had a call from Kathleen in Delavan wondering if it's palatable enough to put a worm bin in a utility room since she doesn't have a basement. I'm guessing she's thinking about the smell and stuff. But I have to say, I don't smell the bin at all. When I walk up to it, when I take the cover off, it's this wonderful, earthy, kind of forest floor kind of smell to it.
Yeah, really, when you're finding a location for your bin, whether you have a house with a basement or maybe you're in an apartment and you don't necessarily have a place that you think is cool enough, a closet where the temperature is around 70 degrees or a little cooler, it's probably going to be the best place for it. Maybe it means that the closet has to be kind of on an outside wall of the apartment building, just somewhere where it's a little bit cooler. If you keep
and somewhere that you're going to remember too.
Well,
if you're keeping it, you know, in a part of the house that you never go in, and you're not going to want to carry your food waste through that part of the house, that's probably not the best place to put it.
Yeah, really, you know, if you have a place that the temperature's good for. Sometimes underneath the kitchen sink works pretty well. Tends to be a little bit of a cooler spot. So that may be an option as well as a closet.
Great. And let's go to Jackie in Milwaukee. Hi, Jackie.
Good morning. I have deliveries from Omaha where I get meat products and cheese. They come in plastic foam containers that I've not been able to find a use for. Can you use plastic foam for a worm bin?
Well, Jackie, I think the foam container would probably work okay. Probably one of the biggest challenges that kind of pops into my head right away is the drainage holes. And it may be a little bit difficult to keep and maintain those drainage holes through that thick foam. And they may tend to clog up with some of the worm castings as the worms move along through their life cycles. So they certainly will work, but I'd pay attention to make sure any drainage holes are actively open and able to pass liquids through them.
And I would say too, I mean, those are probably pretty sturdy, but you know, the bin is going to get heavier the more the worms process the food and the compost is in there. So part of it would be how sturdy they are.
Yeah. You know, trial and error, that works too. You may have to empty it out sooner if it gets a little too heavy.
Great. We just have a couple minutes left, Joe. And one thing I wanted to mention is that, you know, If it's a successful worm bin, at some point, you're going to want to take out the cast. It's worm castings, right?
Yes.
You'll often see that,
yes.
You know, very expensive small bags of it that you can buy. But this is about making your own worm castings. You'll want to take that material out and kind of get the worms situated in new bedding and things like that. What are some of the ways that you actually separate the worms out?
Well, there's really two ways you can go about it. One of them is in the bin, where you can just add food to one half of the bin. The worms are pretty smart. They move to where the food is. So once they finish eating the food in the side of the bin where you're not feeding them, you can clean out that side. You'll probably catch a few worms that are kind of left behind, but that's okay. Add in your fresh shredded newspaper to that side and then start adding your food scraps to that side.
And so they'll just migrate over.
Yes. That process maybe takes a month or 2 months to take to fully rejuvenate your worm bin. Some people aren't willing to wait that long. So the other option is to find yourself a nice maybe garage or a sidewalk and pour the contents of your bin on there. Do it in the middle of the day or have a light presence. The worms don't like light. So the light shines on the pile. You just scrape off the surface of the worms castings and eventually you'll be left with a tight ball of worms at the bottom and you'll have scraped off all those worm castings that you can use for your plants.
Great. And then you just move your worm ball into a nice new bed.
That's right. Fresh newspaper, add some water so that it's damp and the worms are happy and ready to start adding or eating the fresh food that you'll be adding to the bin.
Well, this has been a lot of fun, Joe. And part of the reason I wanted to talk about this week is that there are a lot of kids off of school this week and next week, too. And it seems to me like if people are thinking of starting a worm compost bin, it might be a fun project to get the kids involved with.
I think certainly, too. The kids really enjoy it. But the other side this time of the year, we all have lots of food in our refrigerators.
Right.
And not all of it's going to be eaten because we just can't eat that much.
Right. Unlike the red wigglers, we cannot eat half of our body weight every day.
This is true.
Well, thanks so much. Joe Van Rossum is a recycling specialist and the director of the UW Extension Solid and Hazardous Waste Education Center and an expert on worm composting. And they have great information on the UW Extension site. We have a link to that on our Facebook page. Coming up next, stay tuned because we will be talking with author Eugenia Bone about her fascinating book, Mycophilia, Revelations from the Weird World of Mushrooms. Stay tuned.